Hello there, welcome to My First Time, a gaming podcast about the first time of some of your favourite people in the games industry. Whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on the podcast app of your choice, make sure to give us some love with a review, a like, or whatever you want. On today's episode, we have the infamous reviewer of bad things himself, Stuart Ashen, or, you know, Ashens. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on.
Thank you very much for being on. And I suppose to get the ball rolling, to get it all on the road, what was your first time?
Well, I'm glad you asked. This is a slightly difficult question because I can't remember because I was so young. Mm. But my sister says I was obsessed with like Pac-Man machines and anything. If we went past them in like a pub or whatever when I was very young, and I would stare at the screen and not be able to play it because, you know, you'd have to put coins in. And my parents were not up for that. The first thing I can remember properly playing was going round my sister's friend's house, and they had an Atari 2600. And we played Empire Strikes Back on it. That I can vaguely remember. And they had E.T., but wouldn't let anyone play it because it was bloody awful, which, in hindsight, was very sensible. But disappointing, because we were all into E.T. It was the big thing, you know. Then my uncle had a VIC-20, which he gave me, the old Commodore VIC-20. That was a sort of fairly out of date by the time I got it, but I had some fun with it. Then for Christmas that year, I got, which would have been 1986, December 1986, I got a ZX Spectrum, and then just wasted the rest of my life playing games. By wasted, I mean had a bloody good time.
Yeah. And obviously, a lot of old games. Were any of those old games your favourite game, or what would you class as your favourite game of all time?
Ooh, that's a long list. Probably my favourite is a surprisingly recent one for me, Bloodborne on the PS4. Is maybe my favourite of all things. Love Dark Souls as well. Do enjoy a bit of the Earth Defence Force series. Going back in time, Dungeon Master, Chaos Strikes Back, the ZX Spectrum version of Renegade. There's an arcade conversion nobody remembers. There is a lot of them. But I think if somebody said, you must now say what your favourite game of all time is, I would go for Bloodborne.
And I suppose it's not that long back, so it's not that hard to remember. But can you remember like your feelings when you first played it?
So it's coming off the back of Dark Souls, so you've got the kind of this feel for it already, although it plays much quicker. I really liked the whole aesthetic of it, the sort of Victorian setup of it. And it's that kind of feeling of mystery when you first play, any of the sort of Dark Souls games, which Bloodborne is kind of one, but not really, but kind of.
Yeah,
it's just this sort of feeling of being thrown into something immensely dangerous. Bleak, slightly confusing, and desperately trying to survive and work out what's going on, which is one of my favourite things in gaming, and Bloodborne, I think, has done it better than anything else.
Yeah. I suppose to some it might, because obviously you are someone who is known for collecting such all these retro things and everything. I suppose what would you say is your favourite game from before 2000? And can you remember the first time you played it?
That's gotta be... I'm going with Chaos Strikes Back for the Atari ST, although the Amiga version is very good too. Mm. In fact, it might be better. I've never played it extensively. I think it has an auto map, so that might be better, yeah. But it was the Atari ST version I played, and I played it with a friend on and off for years. It's a dungeon crawler, first person, team of four people, sequel to a game called Dungeon Master, and it's just got the most intricately designed puzzles and dungeon. The whole thing is so well crafted and put together that when we finally completed, which it took us something like 15 years on and off, not constantly, obviously, that would be ridiculous, to finally complete it. And the feeling of achievement was non-existent. We were just gutted that we wouldn't be playing it anymore, really.
And obviously going from the favourites to probably more what your time on YouTube has been more about, and that's, you know, playing with terrible things. And, you know, you've made a book about the bad games that you've played, or at least like the bad old games that you've played. What would you say is actually the worst game you've played? And can you remember the time that you played it?
Oh, I certainly can. So obviously you wrote two books about terrible old games you've probably never heard of. So I was looking at really obscure things because everybody, especially online, it tends to be very American-centric. So it's all sort of Nintendo, Sega games, etc. Some of which were pretty bloody awful. But if you start looking into the back catalogues of, you know, the ZX Spectrum, Amstrad CPC, Commodore 64, Oric Atmos, really going back, that kind of stuff, there's a lot of things that were just spewed out by a coder in an afternoon that he somehow convinced a company to duplicate on tape and sell down the Vic Center or whatever. And yeah, there are an astonishing amount of games which barely work, or in fact don't work. I think if I had to pick the absolute worst, there's two different criteria. So I'm going to say from a technical and gameplay point of view, the worst is probably Squidge. S-Q-I-J, exclamation mark. You know, the sort of word you can't have in English because there's no U after the Q. Well done, lads. For the Spectrum, which it was on several different formats. The Spectrum version doesn't work, is the simplest answer to it. It literally does not work. It was written in something called Laser Basic by a programmer with a grudge against the publisher, so they spent no time on it whatsoever. It's absolutely awful. You're supposed to be controlling this mutant bird, sort of, hence Squidge, I suppose, for squidgin, pigeon.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, but I don't think that's ever been... the truth of that name has never come out. You control this bird that looks like it's been made out of origami by somebody with their teeth, and it kind of jerks around a screen and nothing happens. You press a button to shoot enemies, nothing visually happens unless you hit them and they disappear, so loads of people didn't realise anything was happening at all. You jerk around this maze desperately trying to find some sort of food and get to a tree or something, and none of it quite works or makes sense. But the real joy of it is that as it was presented, it is literally impossible to play because the programmer left the caps lock on in the program and the controls only work with the caps lock off. So you load it up, you press your buttons, literally nothing happens and it's impossible to control. So not only is it virtually unplayable if it did work, it frankly does not work. However, because it was so badly put together, you can break into the program in BASIC with the break key on the Spectrum and go in and turn the caps lock off if you know what you're doing, which is how people have played it.
But yeah,
it's unbelievable that it was released. It was written as an insult to the publisher and they clearly didn't test it or even look at it and just sent it off to the duplicators, where it was released twice. They put it out as a budget game and then released it again as part of a compilation because they are worse than multiple Satans.
And I suppose going for a happier memory now, you obviously talked about the times like getting consoles when you were younger, but can you remember the first console you bought yourself?
Oh, the first one I bought myself. Let me think. That was a Commodore Amiga 1200. So I'd had the Spectrum. We'd replaced the Spectrum with an Atari ST. And then the ST was getting near the end of its life. And a bloke at school was selling off his Amiga 1200 and a load of games, which was important because, you know, games were bloody expensive. So if you get a load with the computer,
yeah,
marvellous. Yes, I saved up my money from a part-time job and then went and bought it from him. And yeah, that was a good day because suddenly options opened to all these other games which you know, weren't released on the ST or inferior versions or whatever. Or more importantly, I had them all at once. It was bloody amazing. I had like a month of just brand new games I never really put any time into.
Yeah.
Good time was had by all.
Can,
by all, I mean me, constantly playing lots of new bloody games. It was fantastic.
Can you remember your favourite game from the Amiga?
Ooh, that's a tough one. There's a lot of them I enjoyed on the Amiga. Trying to think what I put the most time into overall. What did I keep going back to? There's so many. Weirdly, this game called Moonstone that I kept going back to, I was never really good at. And weirdly, I loaded it up on an emulator to stream it live and managed to complete it, like on my first go, having not played it for 10 years. God knows how I'd suddenly got better at it. Really good action RPG type game with brutally difficult and also brutally gory. Lots of blood flying around everywhere. Really nicely done graphics. Always really enjoyed that. And there's just something sort of oddly compulsive about it. And the Amiga version of Space Crusade, I still regularly stream on Twitch to this day.
Yeah.
But that's probably more... I mean, it's a conversion of a board game, so would you say it was really the board game because it's quite, you know, authentic to it? I don't know. But they're games I still go back to on the Amiga, which has got to mean something.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose with all these old games, we've seen it a tiny bit, I suppose, with Amiga games, but we're in a sort of remake, remaster renaissance, re-release renaissance at the moment. Do you think this devalues the original games?
No, I don't think so. They're still there. You can still go and play them. It yeah. doesn't affect what happened in the past at all. I mean, it's like films. It's always a shame, in a way, if there's like a beloved series and they do a crap remake and you're like, oh. And then you watch the remake and it's like, oh, really? Did you have to do that? But yeah. it doesn't actually affect your memories. It doesn't affect the original product. It's all fine. People say things like, oh, my childhood was ruined because they made a different version of a film or whatever. Really? No, that still exists. You can still go and watch it. They didn't come around your house with a hammer and smash up all the original copies. It's fine. Just don't bother playing the remake if it's not very good.
Yeah. And speaking of the remakes as well, what or remasters, etc., which ones have you enjoyed the most, do you think, so far?
Trying to think of remastered games I've actually played. I remember playing the remaster of Monkey Island, or, you know, Escape from Monkey Island, and Monkey Island 2. Did they do a Monkey Island 2? Have I just literally invented that?
I don't know. I remember the first one. And in my head, I swear they've done something with other games in the series.
Yeah, but I'm not sure they did, actually. I think I've just invented that in my brain. Make it happen, whoever owns LucasArts these days.
Disney?
Yeah, the Escape from Monkey Island remake, that was pretty good. Quite enjoyed the new art style in a way, but ultimately I think I preferred the 16-bit graphics.
Yeah.
So I kind of played the whole thing through again, and it's like, oh, actually, I've played it before. But it did have a nice feature, if I recall, where you could literally fade from one to the other. Mm. And there we go. And, you know, I can't really think of any other remakes I've played. I must have done at some stage. Well, I'm just not massively into the remakes. Generally, if I enjoyed the original, that's... you know, still exists and it's been and done. And often they'll miss the point in some way when they do a sort of proper on remake as opposed to a remaster. Although saying that, the Final Fantasy VII remake that's upcoming looks interesting because they've gone a properly different direction with it, which I think is the way to go, isn't it?
Yeah.
No point just making a copy of something that already exists and, I don't know, making the graphics look a bit better.
Yeah.
Should tell you what it did work with quite nicely, actually, Another World. Because the art style of Another World, when upscale, just kind of, you know, looked slightly better for a modern television, really, which is all you can ask for.
Yeah, I suppose the thing, if all you want from something like that is for the original to look a bit prettier, then that ticks all the boxes for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear there's quite a good remake of, or remake remastered, I don't know, a Flashback, but I've yet to play that myself. So.
Yeah. And obviously you've been making videos and other stuff for quite a while now. Can you remember the first gaming-related video you made?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm trying to go through the early questions in my mind. So if it was purely gaming, as opposed to looking at a sort of handheld, awful knockoff pop station or whatever... I'd have to go through the list to find out exactly. It was probably something like a video based on terrible old games you've probably never heard of, which started out as a sort of video series, and was partially just because I wanted to tell everyone how bad Renegade 3 was. I spent 10 quid on that. I will never get over it. I did a video on the quickest game overs ever. That was quite early, but I think I'd kind of done terrible old games first. But back in the early days, it was a real pain to capture footage from games and then sort of get it into a format where all the pixels weren't funny shapes and things. I mean, it's trivially easy these days, which is a massive improvement. But screen capture was difficult. Emulator capture was difficult. Oh, nothing looked right when you'd captured it. Oh, bad times.
I remember back in the like early days of YouTube when it was 07, I want to say. But I remember like just setting up a camcorder to like film me playing games. And it's just like, it's crazy how much easier that's become now, I suppose, for you to be able to do that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. With things like whatever NVIDIA calls Shadow Play these days, which just records your screen and it's all good. I mean, that's made such a difference, that kind of thing. Because really, the best way of doing it probably was to point a high quality camera at a screen, as you did. Because trying to do it internally, the aspect ratio would be off. Everything was... Oh, I'm getting terrible flashbacks to spending hours in very primitive video editing software desperately trying to make a Spectrum game look like the pixels were square. Never managed it.
You briefly mentioned the terrible handhelds that are obviously the Pop Station. And, you know, you've become infamous, I suppose, for reviewing all of these terrible handhelds from various sources. Out of all of them, which one would you say is the best? Are any of them the best?
Ooh, I mean, these days, everything that looks like a Pop Station or similar is generally just an Android-based thing, so they're all fine.
Yeah.
You know, they've usually got terrible batteries in, but they will, you know, run various things. I would have said the best out of the proper homebrew stuff is certainly not the real cheapy, easy LCD game. Something like the Game King, which was actually its own very low-res cartridge-based system. And the games are kind of crap, but at least they're smooth, and
yeah,
they're actually games you can play, and they don't just flicker a few images in front of your eyes and pretend they're a game. Also have interesting sample sounds as well. So that's my tip for the best, the Game King, definitely, and the various other branded versions of it. So there's probably at least 400 million of those.
Yeah.
Worst overall, I'm going to say the Tilt games, which were games... I'm looking around my desk for a Wii controller, like I have one of those sitting around. It's like a game put in a fake Wii controller with a tiny LCD screen you can barely see, and you control the game by moving it left and right so that a metal ball moves between two sets of contacts. It's the worst thing ever. It's totally unplayable. You can't see what's going on. Oh, it's just an insult for the poor grandmas who have bought it for the children for Christmas, thinking it's a video game thing they'll like.
And I suppose outside of the actual consoles and stuff, I know one of your most popular videos is the Pac-Man board game.
Oh, yes, yeah. With Guru Larry Bundy, yes.
Yeah. And obviously you've played with and got to see like lots of wonderful, weird video game tat. Which is a nice way to call it a lot of the time, I suppose. But what's been your favourite and least favourite thing from that, do you think? And what's like your memories with them?
Oh, my favourite piece of video game tie-in stuff. I'm going to say at the moment Dark Souls the board game, which is really good. It's actually more difficult than the game. the actual video game is a really difficult board game. But I'm slowly going through it with a group of friends, and yeah, always a good time playing that. Also, it's so beautifully put together and designed. The lovely little miniatures and things. Oh, it's so nice. So nice. For video game tie-in stuff that's not so good... If I had to pick one thing out of all the things I've ever looked at for it, I'm going to go with... It's a little thing from BioShock Infinite, which was given away in one of the special editions of it. And it's the Handyman character. It's supposed to be a little model about, you know, yay high of the Handyman character. And it's like something you'd get out of a cracker, like genuinely. And not even a good cracker. It's just this lump of plastic very loosely in the shape of a Handyman. It's absolutely awful. It'd been much better to have given you nothing because it's like almost insultingly poor. I still can't believe it was given away with such a quality game, but there we go.
Yeah. And I suppose there's been lots of collector's editions that are just straight up terrible. What's been the most money you've spent on a collector's edition?
I never spend money on collector's editions, so I know they're never going to be worth anything going down the line, really. I always wait until they're cheap, or somebody messages me and says, oh, look, on Amazon, you can get this one for like 10 quid now. I think the most I've ever spent on one... Oh, I can tell you easily. Actually, this was actually a really nice thing. It's something I wanted for myself. It was when Dark Souls 2 was released. They did a version in Japan which came with a wooden case that you open up and it has metal replicas of some of the weapons in. It's absolutely beautiful. I actually had a friend who was in Japan at the time buy it for me and you bring it back over. And that, I can't remember what that cost now, but it was considerable. It probably came close to like 60, 70 pounds or something.
Yeah.
But I don't regret that because it's quite rare and it's quite a nice thing. Unfortunately, it turned out I didn't really like Dark Souls 2 at all. So it's a shame on that front. But yeah, as collectibles go, that is certainly my favourite video game thing.
I think that's the, thing. If the more you spend on a collector's edition, normally means the less you're going to like the game. Is sort of like, I think that's how the math works.
That is absolutely a rule of thumb in my experience. Yeah, my God.
And obviously, because I'm not saying this by and saying you're old, so I apologise if that's this is how
you
this
sounds. It's fine. Come to terms with it.
But you know, same as me at 31. What's been your proudest gaming achievement or moment so far? Would you say?
Now I do feel old that you're only 31. my famous gaming achievement. Somehow completing Moonstone on stream was really good.
Yeah.
Mentioned that earlier, but I still can't understand how I did that. Do you know, it has been little bits of streaming. I streamed Dark Souls and, yeah, did not do amazingly well at like a shortcut bit at the start. It took me like, usually it's something I can do immediately with no effort, and it took like 40 attempts, absolutely farcical like that. But then later on in the game, I managed to get past the dreaded Andor Londo Archers first time, which is always nice, but I managed to defeat the Bed of Chaos boss without dying.
Oh, cool.
Which I didn't think was really, I knew it wasn't impossible, but I didn't think it was feasible. Because if you don't know the boss, it's rubbish. It's like one of these puzzle bosses, but a really crap one. You basically have to run to one side of a big round area, hit a thing, then run all the way around to the other side of the area, which is now almost impossible because the floor is collapsing and there's a big tree monster slapping you and stuff. Then if you can hit the other one, you have to run back to the center, which is, by now everything's collapsing and there's an immediate death fall and is ludicrously difficult. Then do a very specific roll or jump onto a little ledge and run underneath and squash a big bug. Literally, it's a terrible boss, but it's so difficult. So you generally have to do the first bit. In fact, you'll often deliberately quit. If people are speedrunning, they'll deliberately quit out because it's just such a pain.
Yeah.
And then reappear in sort of the middle. So you do one bit, do the second bit, do the third bit. I somehow ran the whole way and did it all. And it wasn't just the fact that I managed to do it, but it's the fact that A, it was recorded, and B, people were watching it live. It's like, this actually happened. I did a thing. Please give me plaudits. They did not, but I felt quite pleased with myself for at least 38 seconds.
Surely at least one person gave you an applause or something.
I'm sure they did in their heads, but they didn't tell me about it.
And what's the holy grail in terms of video game, like merchandise and stuff that you are... Is there something that you really want to get your hands on that you haven't had the chance to, or do you already own it?
There must be something... And off the top of my head, I can't think for that kind of collectible. There's not that many video game collectibles that appeal to me, and the ones that do, I've generally managed to get hold of.
Yeah.
But if it was something just gaming related in general, I would love a PC Engine LT. One of the little, it's a little handheld PC engine. Well, it's not that little, really, that folds open like a weird cross between a Game Boy and a laptop. That's the only way to describe it. And I was always slightly obsessed with the design. And I've currently been lent one by a friend to do a video on that. And they are beautiful. And they are now so expensive, I wouldn't even consider buying or keeping one, which is a shame. But they are a hell of a thing. I was going to say, if somebody inexplicably gave me one in the street, that would be lovely, but to be honest, they're so expensive now, I'd probably bloody sell it, just because I wouldn't use it enough to actually justify the sheer cost of it.
Yeah.
That, and there are several Sega Saturn games I need to complete a collection of PAL Saturn games I've got. Well, I say PAL is UK Saturn games, really.
Yeah.
And some of those are frighteningly expensive, like the Mega Man game for Saturn, which now goes for slightly more than 14 houses in central London. The prices have just gone insane. But I don't think I will ever complete that collection.
Yeah. And do you have any finished game collections?
Yes, Atari Lynx.
Yeah.
I have all the cartridges released in the UK for the Atari Lynx. Although technically not at the second, because I've somehow lost the NFL game out of it, the box, which has annoyed me intensely. I'm probably just going to have to buy a replacement at some stage because I cannot for the life of me think where it's gone.
Yeah.
But technically, as soon as I replace that, yes, a complete game collection for the Atari Lynx, which is probably my favourite of the handhelds.
Yeah, and at least like sports games tend to always go for fairly cheap still if you're trying to buy them.
Annoyingly, not so for the Lynx, because it's the only game of that type on the Lynx. It was very cheap when I originally bought it. I think I got it for like £3 or £4, but I think they go for considerably more now. Yes. I should probably bite the bullet and do that soon, actually, before the prices increase even further.
Yeah, or before someone hears this. And obviously, outside of the YouTube unboxings and various other things that you get up to, you have been known to dabble in acting and obviously make films. And obviously, the films you make are video game inspired. But what are your main inspirations when it comes to making them?
I think with films, it's always what are the films that inspired you when you were growing up? What are your favourite films? What are your favourite aspects of them? And then you start drilling down and seeing what makes them tick. And then seeing if you can reproduce at least a small amount of that on a budget slightly less than they spent on the sandwiches. Unless it's a recent film, then it's considerably less than they spent on the sandwiches. Yeah, I mean, the first film, I always like road films, road movies, as they call them, you know, they're travelling from one place to another. So our first film, Ashens and the Quest for the Game Child, is very much set up like a road movie. Also, that is, road movies quite a nice thing to do if you're on a low budget as well, because you can write it quite episodically, because we're in this location, then we go to this location. Yeah. And it's a great way to bring in characters and take characters out and all that. So it's quite a nice thing to do as a first film. But my real favourite are heist films, or caper films, if you want to use an old British term for it. So our second film is a heist film, which is the complete bloody opposite, because it's the most difficult thing a bloody writer is, because everything has to fit into everything else. Everything affects something else. It has to be so tightly put together, or you're going to end up with like massive plot holes. Which at the very least you've got to try to hide from the audience. If not, the whole thing is going to collapse in itself. Do you look at even high budget ones released? There's always something they try and gloss over. There's always something in the plot that doesn't quite sit in, even with Ocean's 11, which is such a fine example of such things.
Yeah.
I think we've managed to keep Ashens and the Polybius heist quite tight in that sense, mainly because we've kept it a little bit simpler plot-wise than most of those, which has also helped the budget, which is good, but it's helped sort of keep it all together. Plus, when you're going for something that's a comedy version of things, you don't want to be trying to get too clever with the plot, because you've got to fit all your jokes and stuff in there.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously the Polybius heist, have I said that right?
You absolutely have.
Yes, I got it right. It's based on a very famous video game urban legend, or I imagine it takes inspiration from it at the very least. But
yes, just the inspiration. We've spun our own version of it for obvious reasons. But that's one of those. I think it's the only proper gaming urban legend that's sort of got any traction, and it's one of the more interesting ones, certainly. I mean, as has been discovered, it's almost certainly people misremembering a Cube Quest machine, but. And then deliberately sort of blown up into a thing from somebody taking inspiration from it in real life. But we've weaved our own story around it, because of course we have. It's a film. Yes. But if you want to actually look into the legend itself, Xbox Ahoy did a really good video on it. Really good.
And would you say that the story of the Polybius arcade unit is your favourite gaming urban legend? Or is there any that have sort of happened recently that you think of, or any from your childhood, like my dad works at Nintendo that might...
I think the Polybius is certainly the most interesting of them. It's far more fleshed out than most of them, which obviously details help, but it just has everything you want from a sort of conspiracy theory, doesn't it? Shadowy government agents, weird technology, people being experimented on. I mean, and... obviously none of it's real, but that's not the point. It's a good story, and that's the enjoyment you get out of it, isn't it?
I mean, you say it's not real. There's always a small chance it is real, and it's just been really well covered up.
No. The other big one, of course, this was not an urban legend anymore because it's now been proven, was that the old Atari cartridges, ET, etc., have been buried somewhere in the Mexican desert.
Yeah.
But of course, just as people were starting to properly say, oh, no, that never happened, they went and found out where it was under a car park now and dug them all up. So that's less an urban legend and something that quite literally happened. Because, you know, I've seen one of the cartridges in the Center for Computing History. It certainly was a thing. And they smell really bad because they've been in a garbage dump for 25, 30 years or whatever.
Yeah, I realize it's probably not the nicest thing to go put in a museum after it's been, like, just buried
in... It's not really. No, it was in like a Perspex thing where the people in the museum said, oh, hang on, I'm just going to open it up, have a sniff. I'm like, oh, really? Oh, it smells like a bin bag. But of course it does. You know, it's literally been rotting in landfill.
Yeah.
Oh, what a waste.
And obviously, when you were talking about the worst games, and, you know, earlier as well, you did mention E.T. Does E.T. deserve the flack that it gets?
Yes, it does. So people say, oh, it's the worst game ever. Man, it's not even in the top 200 worst games ever when you start delving into the back catalogues of, you know, God knows what home computers.
Yeah.
But the big thing was it was a massive release. I mean, it was a huge tie-in with a... you know, massive Hollywood film that captured the imagination at the time, big marketing campaign about it, Atari went mental, got it out everywhere. So loads of people went and bought this thing on the strength of the license and the advertising. And whilst we're saying, yeah, I mean, there's much worse games out there, it's still really, really bad. It's just so tonally odd. It's so designed so bizarrely. I mean, you spend half of the game just slowly levitating out of pits. I mean, it's awful. To think that it was written by the same guy as Yar's Revenge is astonishing.
Yeah.
Mind you, of course, they gave him enough time to write Yar's Revenge, whereas, you know, famously, they gave him like 12 minutes to get E.T. out of the door. So, you know, what could he do? Howard Scott Warshaw, I think his name was. But yeah, it absolutely deserves all the flack that's thrown at it and more. Because for some kids, that was their big Christmas gift, E.T. And it's absolute garbage. Ugh. No, rot its bones.
Speaking of Christmas gifts, if there was, you know, parents that really hated their kids or something like that, what would be the one game or gaming tat thing you would say to them to buy?
Oh. There's two different approaches to it. The first is just to buy some really awful pop station or knockoff console of some type that just doesn't work properly. Preferably one with an old school LCD flickery screen that they can't play anything on. That's always a nice way to upset the kids. The other route you could do, of course, is to buy peripherals for a console they don't have. You know, Tony Hawk's plastic skateboard, few Guitar Hero things for the Xbox 360 when they've got a PS4, so they can just fill their room with plastic accessories that can't be used. Make sure you don't give them a game as well, just in case they do come across one of the consoles. And yeah, they can just rot in a corner and think of what might have been.
Do you mean the children or the things?
Both.
Okay. And as I get close to the end of the podcast, I like to give sort of a weird question just to... I'm aware that I've asked some weird questions as it is anyway. But... in terms of replacing either an arm or a leg with cheese, what limb would you choose and what cheese would you replace it with?
What keys would I replace it with?
Cheese. So like
cheese. Oh, sorry if I said what keys. I was thinking about like door keys or keyboard keys. If you had to remove a limb and replace it with cheese... Well, I would go for left arm because I'm right-handed, so I need the right hand. And you need your legs to be able to run away from zombies because you never know when that's going to happen. And the cheese would have to be Gouda because the name is probably the best one for making puns out of.
That is true. What is your favourite Gouda pun?
Well, it's as Gouda as it gets, really, isn't it? I apologise to all humans.
And if people obviously want to watch you on Twitch or YouTube or various other things, what is the best way for them to find you?
Just need to Google Ashens, A-S-H-E-N-S, one word, like Madonna, which is a joke I stole from an Inspector Gadget film and now I feel bad.
Was it the good Inspector Gadget film?
There was a good Inspector Gadget film. it's the one with, is it Matthew Broderick?
Yeah,
and the villain is played by... Oh, that guy whose name I can't remember. Rupert Everett.
Okay.
There we are. That's useless trivia for you. Enjoy.
Thank you very much. But yeah, obviously, if you've enjoyed the podcast, please do make sure to leave it some love on whatever you are listening or watching it on. And, you know, make sure to leave a review, leave a comment, whatever you want. But until next time, I've been Brett from GameByte. You have been...
I've been Stuart Ashen. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Goodbye.
Goodbye.